everything paranormal. Para X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Merry meet and merry part, bright the cheeks and warm the heart. For tread the circle thrice about to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet everybody and welcome. My guest tonight is John Klann, and he's going to be talking about his book, Skeleton Keys. Now, John's been interested in ghost stories since he was a kid and has spent probably the majority of his adult life as a professional artist in between reading and writing about his favorite subject. He has made it a really good point to collect at least one story from everybody he's ever known. And at long last, his stockpile turned into a book, and I'm glad it did because it's a good book. If you're in the Para X chat room, please feel free to ask a question or comment. And if you're not here, you can be here if you come over to paraxradionetwork.com. Welcome, John. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me, Marla.
Well, you did a good book, so of course you had to be here. In the book's introduction, you ask three questions. They are, is there such a thing as a ghost? Mm-hmm. If there is such things, what are they? And if ghosts exist, by what, if any, physical or spiritual laws are they governed? And the only pretty much correct answer to all three is, I don't know, right?
That is my stance, yes, indeed.
Yeah, and we never will know, and yet I think we stop trying. You know, I think it's kind of like a dog chasing its tail. You know, you might never catch it, but you're going to keep going until you think you can, right?
Well, you know, man is curious, and, we are interested in categorizing things and understanding things. So it's in our nature to try and understand things, give things names, and keep looking for answers. My philosophy on just about everything that, you know, as a human being, I have a very limited capacity to understand these higher matters. All I can really do is observe, make observations and be honest. So I'll tell you the truth. After interviewing people and doing my homework and writing this book, I'm still not sure. You know, I mean, obviously, paranormal activity, such as we call it, it's real. It does happen. Mm-hmm. But why does it happen? Is it the result of spirits? Is it something else? That's where I'm still open-mindedly skeptical.
And I was just going to ask you if you were a believer of ghosts and hauntings or an open-minded skeptic. So you read my mind.
Yeah. And, you know, I may have actually seen an apparition once. I'm not sure. I had one experience where it may have been the case. Mm-hmm. But, you know, anything else like a UFO or, you know, a religious moment or whatever, it happens to other people and they fully believe it. And, you know, they tell you about it. They're honest. You know, they're honest. But until mm-hmm. something happens to you, it's really hard for you to have that conviction. And mm-hmm. although I have been around paranormal activity, things have happened, even right here in this house that I live in, mm-hmm. Weird stuff. I can't explain it. Yeah, I have not seen, I haven't had the typical apparition experience where you see another person materialize, disappear, walk through a wall, something like that. If I saw that myself, then I would feel qualified to say, well, whatever that is, folks, that's what we call a ghost. Sure, then I can tell you that that really happens because I've seen it. Since I haven't, I don't feel that I have the, bona fides to really make that assertion. I leave that to other people. I tell other people stories who have had that experience, and I stand by them. I believe they're honest. So, that's just where I am. It's just, that's my personality. I don't like to really take credit for something I haven't done yet, if you understand what I'm saying.
Sure, but what was it that you saw that you thought it might be? Because it probably 10,000 people when you say that said they'll say the same thing.
Well, I of course know people who have seen apparitions, my wife included, and you better believe I trust her. What happened to me once was, I'll just tell you the story. I'll try to make it short, but it
No,
was around
don't
Christmas.
worry.
Okay, it was Christmas time, maybe 10 years ago, and I live in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. We were in the local mall here, shopping, and we decided to go upstairs in a store, and we decided let's take the elevator this time instead of the stairs. So we're walking towards the elevator, and I noticed standing next to the elevator button, the call buttons, was an old woman, and she was remarkable in that she looked really rough. I mean, she looked like she should not be out Christmas shopping. She looked like someone who really needed to be like an ER. I mean, she was looked sickly. She was dressed in what I would referred to as rags, and I thought, well, maybe a cleaning woman, maybe a chore woman, if they even have things like that anymore. But I mean, this lady looks really out of place, and I'm with my son, who's very young at the time, and I didn't want him to feel nervous, So anyway, we call the elevator. It comes. Now, an elevator in a department store is pretty small, maybe 8 by 8. So myself, my wife, my young son, and this woman. Now, my wife and my son are talking. They're looking at one another. They're to my left. The woman is right in front of me. And now I'm getting a real close look at her. And she looks very, very sick, I would say. She just looked very rough. Like, I thought, like, you should not be out tonight. You need to be in, either the care of your family or, you need to lie down. You look really bad. So, that was unusual. Then she looked somewhat familiar to me. Then she started smiling, and as she smiled, her face wrinkled and her flesh was very papery, like very dehydrated. And she got close to my son. She was smiling at my son, and she crouched down and she was really close to him. So I thought, well, I hope my son isn't going to be disturbed by the appearance of this poor person. And also, when she smiled, I have to tell you that she resembled very much my mother-in-law, who had passed already 10 years before that. Then I'm thinking, well, I hope my wife isn't disturbed by this thing because it looks so much like her mom, Well, anyway, the lady stands up again. He has a big smile on, staring at my son. Elevator door opens, and we walk out. Now, normally, I would say, I'm the kind of person who would say, to my wife, what did you think of that lady? She looked really bad. I mean, and did you notice, she kind of looked up like your mom. I mean, I would talk about it because it just happened and it was kind of unusual. But that's one of the strange things about this thing is that I just didn't like some, like, I felt like something was just telling me, you know what, don't even talk about this. In fact, it was a couple of days before I actually brought it up, and this is unusual because it was on my mind, weighing on my mind. So finally, a few days later, I told my wife, when we were in the store and we took that elevator upstairs, she said, yeah. I said, well, what did you think of that old woman? And she said, what old woman? I said, you know, the old lady that looked really rough, she was in the apartment with us. She kneeled, she bent down very close to Derek's face, and she's smiling in his face. This woman who looked like she was going to drop dead. So I don't remember anyone. I didn't see anyone. What are you talking about? And now remember, this is a very small chamber we're in. You can't miss this. And then later, my son, and he also didn't recall that. So, I mean, how did you not see her? I mean, the four of us were like within a circle of like 3 feet. So I'm not sure what that was. Did I only see that? Did they just not pay attention to her? It puzzles me. I'm not sure. How could they not have seen this person? How could they not have seen her actions and noticed her incredibly unusual appearance? And I guess if I think about it, she obviously didn't make any noise either. So there's a lot of unusual aspects, this one short event. But it also happens that a few years before that, again at Christmas time, in the same shopping mall, my wife had an experience where she was watching my son kind of play around the fountain. She looked up, believed she saw her mother who had passed, smiling at Derek, watching, you know, from the edge of the fountain. And then when she looked back quickly, nobody there. Mm-hmm. So that kind of, it's like happening at the same time of year, kind of same event, you know, visiting Derek, having a smile at Derek. So that I would have to put down as a possible paranormal event, because what I just told you is all I've got, you know.
That's but plenty.
I think it's highly unusual that they didn't see this and had no memory of it, because they remember that night, they remember going in the elevator. So that's one that has me a little stumped.
I just think you were meant to see her and nobody else for whatever reason, you know, again, part of the unknown.
That's one of the possibilities. That's why I call it like my possible, you know, experience.
Well, it was an experience, but, you know, yeah, some people never get that far. So this is a good thing. But when you were a kid, what piqued your interest in ghost stories? And did you grow up in a family that believed in ghosts and hauntings?
No, quite the opposite. My parents didn't like anything like that. They would have, well, my parents are both, they're both European. They, you know, I'm the first American in the family, and, you know, American culture and is a lot more, there's a lot more variety. I know you're free to do anything you want. There's certain things that, like society doesn't discuss. That was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
That actually got me interested. It's hard to peg. It was just always something that kind of fascinated me. You know, of course, I love to watch ghost stories and stuff like that on TV and read spooky stories. But even as a child, I was intrigued enough that when we believed there was a haunted house in the neighborhood, you know, I would go up there at night, sit on the steps and wait for something to happen. When I moved to Long Island, there was another supposedly haunted house. So I insisted in going in there and exploring. And this is way before the idea of ghost hunting, you know, was ever came up. So, you know, it's just a natural inclination, just a compulsion. I can't really explain it. I did have some unusual experiences that I just put, you know, I just put down to like being a kid and not really knowing what was going on or even having dreams. But, yeah, it's just always fascinated me. And then, you know, when you're a kid and you hear some people say, oh, yeah, well, you know, I really did have an experience like this. This stuff is real. Well, that piques your interest. And you don't want to, you know, you leave that alone. Like, if that's for real, then I want to know about it. So I think it was just curiosity,
mm-hmm.
maybe something like that.
Yeah, well, it kind of grew on you, didn't it, after a while?
Yes, it did. I mean, you know, mysteries are interesting.
Do you think it's important for us to really try and delve into the unknown? Is it just, you know, some people want to, some people don't. It doesn't make any difference. But some people, I think, believe that it's necessary to keep finding out about stuff, and others just say, eh, what? No big deal.
Well, my opinion on that, I do think it's important because, you know, we know so little about the world. I mean, any little extra bit helps us understand our existence and what we can expect perhaps after it. I don't know if it's important. You know, everybody's life is so personal. They have their own personal priorities and what's important to them. And don't forget, you know, a lot of people grow up with this sort of settled in their mind already. You know, certain families, they just say, you know, that doesn't exist. You know, we don't believe that. And you grow up with a bias against that. Some people are even, you know, some people, some religious sects are, I don't know if I want to say they're afraid to talk about it, but, you know, it is just something that you don't raise. So for them, I guess it's not important. But to lay people, I mean, you know, there's only so many things we can focus on in our lives. There's only so much room I have in my mind for all the many things that are constantly swirling around up there. I have to pick and choose. And this, you know, this thing kind of chose me. That's, again, all I can say is kind of a compulsion. It's not like I said, well, I need to be, I want to be interested in something. Like, what can I pursue? It's just like something that just kind of called to me. And it was just something I was always interested in and continue to be curious about.
Mm-hmm. Now, the book is comprised of 10 haunting stories, and not about haunted houses, but not either, well, workplaces of all sorts, but not like you would say, like somebody's a cemetery worker or somebody works in a morgue. The stories come from everyday people that are working in all kinds of places. And personally, I think that there isn't a place on earth where there isn't ghosts or spirits. What do you think about that?
Well, I would echo that sentiment exactly. I've been saying that, you know, for years, because the closer you get to this stuff, the more people you speak to. I mean, for instance, you said in your intro how I try to take one story from everyone I meet. Mm-hmm. I couldn't, unless everyone I met had a story. So, yeah. You know, it's so prevalent. Even people who resist the idea. You know, there are some people I'll ask, you know, hey, you got any stories like that? I collect ghost stories. In the beginning, they'll say, nah, there's no such thing. And then, you know, other people start opening up. And then by the end of the day, that guy opens up to us and says, well, you know, there was this one thing. He tells me this, like, incredibly wild story, you know. Well, why didn't you tell me that, you know, when I asked you? That is, like, one of the best ones. It just, yeah, I do believe that it's just everywhere. I believe it's a part of the natural world. Even this house, I mean, this house was built 30 years ago. I'm the second owner. I'm talking about where I am speaking to you from.
Mm-hmm.
Not an old house. Nobody died here or anything. But, you know, there's been occasional activity here, too. I mean, stuff that's kind of crazy that I can't explain. But I could ignore, all right? I'm that kind of a person, you know? I could be, you know, in a room watching TV and believe that I see a shadow person, you know, scoot by and I'll think, oh, I don't know what that was. Could have been a shadow person. Could have been, you know, just an eyelash and bent over where my eye is. And I'm watching my show, so I just get over it, like, instantly. And I think a lot of people do that, you know, like something like that happens and they just brush it off because they can't explain it. Plus, they're busy doing something else. I really think that happens a lot.
No, you're
but
right.
But I do believe it's everywhere. And not all the time. I mean, I've been here like 22 years, and you know, there's been maybe a handful of times when something unusual happened. It's like once in a blue moon sort of a thing. But as I said before, you know, it's like anybody that I talk to eventually coughs up something that's unexplainable. So be prevalent, you know. And people have been talking about this subject, you know, since the dawn of time. So
yes.
It's got to be, you know, I mean, there's your evidence.
Yeah, where there's smoke, there's fire to be, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was right when you were talking about it, asking somebody and then they eventually say something, because when I was writing my Ghosts of Hollywood series, I didn't go to locations that had reputations of being ghost haunted thing. I went to places that were well established and known, but not for their hauntings. And, you know, some of the places had Hollywood history, and so that was fun. And I, you know, in the back of my head, I thought, well, maybe there's some stuff going on there. And so I walked into, for example, I walked into a restaurant that is across the street from Warner Brothers in Hollywood. And I was talking to the owner because we were going to try and do, well, I was thinking about doing a investigation there, but I didn't have anything planned yet. And so we were sitting and having dinner, and all of a sudden, out of my mouth, I asked the waitress, you know, is there any kind of spooky things going on around here? And her eyes got really big. And she says, mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Yeah, I'll be right back. And I thought, oh, God, I'm going to get kicked out, you know. But she comes back with the busboy and the cashier and her and said, nobody's ever asked us. But here's these stories. And she started telling me things that were going on in there. And it was like, it was cathartic, you know. She got it off her chest because they had mm-hmm. seen things and known things. And so, yeah, sometimes if you ask people, not in any particular way because anything, look, you know, you're supposed to be in a haunted house, I think you're right. Everybody has a story.
Yeah, just, it turns out to be that way. I so far really can't remember too many, if any, people who just steadfastly said no. And my whole family, nobody's ever, you know, told us anything like that.
Right, just, yeah.
Much more common than it is uncommon.
It is, yeah. So how did you decide to name the book Skeleton Keys?
Well, the subtitle, which was required, is Workplace Hauntings.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole genesis of the thing was, you know, I was, you know, my interest in this. So ghost books were very popular starting, you know, a couple of years back. You couldn't really go on vacation anywhere without going to the gift shop and seeing, you know, Ghosts of Virginia, Ghosts of Orlando, you know. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, these ghost books, this is going to be fun. So I would always buy them, and I had quite a collection at a certain point. But I found them to be kind of dry. You know, these are people telling these pretty fantastic stories, and they're just like doing it like they're a news reporter. I thought, I would think I'd like to make this a little bit more exciting. So my wife said, oh, why don't you just write your own then? Write it your way. You know, write the book you'd want to read.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured, okay, I think I'll do that. And I sent a copy of my writing to the publisher, but I needed a gimmick, something to be a little bit different from all the others. So I thought, okay, how about if I focus on people who experience this in their workplace? In other words, people who are compelled to go every day to a place that has a history like this, that has activity like this. It's not like they can, you know, you can sell your house or you can, you can leave a haunted location. But, you know, these people, there may be a subset of people like that who just have to, you know, buck up and deal with it. And I'd like to find out if those people are around. And I'll tell you why I even thought about these people in particular, because as the first chapter illustrates in the book, the first time I realized there were people like that is when I was house hunting, when I was trying to move to Pennsylvania from New York. And we were touring houses all the time. And in one particular house, we had an experience, and the real estate agent was a little bit shaken up by it. And I realized that, you know, I may not have to go back there ever again, but this guy probably does. He might, you know, he probably have to go there until he sells the house. And how many other places are like that? How many other realtors are dealing with something like that? I actually thought realtors would be a gold mine. But anyway, and then, you know, you get thinking about people who work in historic, you know, giving tours of historic homes or historic places. You know, there are people who have to go into creepy places and they just have to. That's how they earn their paycheck. So yes. I thought that would be an interesting gimmick. And that's why it's called Skeleton Keys, because these people have the keys to these places.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's just sort of a little clever, you know, symbolism about, you know, to represent that these people kind of unlock these doors every day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what I like about the book, aside from the stories, I mean, you give such good backstory about each of the stories. You talk in depth about the persons involved, as well as the histories and the locations and stuff. And I really think that makes the stories even more interesting than just, you know, cut and dry say something.
Well, thank you for that compliment. Of course, I was trying to do that. That was my goal. It's like, I wanted to tell these people's stories, but I wanted to tell them in a way that was maybe the word is more entertaining, but I wanted the reader to kind of feel like they were going along with these people. So when the experience happens, it's a little bit surprising to them. They almost get a feeling for it. Because as I said before, I've read many such books where it just says, you know, this happened and then this happened and it's possibly related to an event that happened in, you know, 1800s and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's just facts. It's not really taking the reader on the journey so they can kind of be in the place of the person who had the experience. So that's why I tried to do that. Obviously, I would want to flesh out people and, you know, what's going on before the experience. So, you know, just kind of set up what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I obviously, you know, I would like to write fiction. I like to write fiction, okay? Mm-hmm. So I want to bring a little bit of those tools into writing this book, even though this is nonfiction. I wanted it to read more like a story than a news article. So
mm-hmm. I guess that's mm-hmm. And you did it well. You did it well.
Thank you.
All right, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but, you know, the story that you were just talking about with the realtor,
mm-hmm.
You know, you had an experience, and you said that you felt right off the bat that you were walking through the house and felt like the house had an attitude. Now, mm-hmm. was that the first time you'd ever had feelings like this?
I think it was. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not psychic. I don't have any such claims. I have had more intense experiences since then. But, you know, it was a vibe. I guess that's what I was describing. There was mm-hmm. just a vibe to me personally. I guess nobody else that day. But to me, there was a vibe, like not that there was a presence there.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost feel like there was some communication happening. You know, mm-hmm. it wasn't just a random place that, you know, it wasn't just a bunch of rooms. The house had an attitude. And it just felt different. It felt strange. And that happened to me a couple of times in the house. Like I was saying before, I'm the kind of person where if something like that happens, I just assume, you know, it's not important. I'm already busy doing something else in this case, judging the house that I might buy. So I just brush it off. But it kept intruding upon me. And, then of course, in the chapter, you'll read that when I came to one of the bedrooms, which must have been the master bedroom, I really got a strong feeling about who lived here, that this person had passed. It was very personal. It was a personal experience for some reason. I mean, it usually is very impersonal, you know. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, that was particularly felt like a personal experience between me and something there. And then, of course, later on, the paranormal activity happened, which mm-hmm. do you want me to describe that?
Yes, I do. But we're going to do a break first.
Okay.
Because it's a really good story. And let's drop the carrot. It's called Footsteps Across the Empty Room. That's the name of the first chapter. So we're going to take a 30-second early break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the footsteps. Stay tuned, everybody.
Cauldron will be right back, so don't go away.
If you end up with webbed feet,
remember, you've been warned.
As you go about your daily life, look closer. Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth, 50 years strong. Every youth who walks into Covenant House gets clean clothes, hot meals, medical care, and a safe place to sleep. So look closer at Covenant House and help us fight youth homelessness. To help or get help, go to covenanthouse.org.
Are you haunted by shadow people in the middle of the night?
Do you secretly love all things creepy and spooky, enjoying ghost stories and horror fiction from the best storytellers?
Do you have a true ghost experience you want to share, but no one will believe you?
If yes, listen to The Professionals on What Are You Afraid of? Horror Paranormal Show, Friday nights at 9 p.m. on Para-X Radio and at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com.
What are you afraid of on Para-X?
Our creepy and demented hosts are on call to provide you with all your spooky needs with true ghost stories, interviews, indie music, and new horror fiction. We are ready to scare you.
Para-X.
Hi, this is Marla with some exciting news about Stirring the Cauldron. Starting on April 25th, and then on the last Thursday of every month, I'm turning Stirring the Cauldron into a virtual classroom. Each masterclass will be taught by the cleverest of professors, and they'll be teaching on a variety of subjects. There's no tuition fee or any detention after class, and you won't get sent to the headmaster's office either, not for any reason. So conjure up your notebook, sharpen your quills, and become a student once again. Classes begin at 9 p.m. Eastern, so I'll see you then. Oh, and try not to be late. The school elf loves to give out tardy slips.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And tonight, my guest tonight is John Klein, and we're talking about his book, Skeleton Keys. And right before the break, we were talking about footsteps across the empty room. So I'm going to hand it over to you.
Okay. Well, yeah, as we were saying earlier, you know, this house, this particular property had a feeling about it that I was really sensing. And we did a very complete inspection of this house, as you do when you're home buying. And just to set it up for everybody else, you know, when we rolled up to this place, there was nobody outside. There were no kids playing. There was no traffic. It was a weekday, you know, middle of the day. I guess everyone was at work. A pretty deserted place. And when you walk through a house that you're considering purchasing, you inspect everything. So I can tell you that we opened every closet. We opened every drawer, every cabinet. I mean, almost like a sleuth looking for a clue. I can guarantee that this house was empty. And that's a fact. So what happened was, before we left, I was, one of the things I wanted in a house was a basement, hopefully a big basement. I wanted a little workshop in there. So last thing we did was take a walk down to the basement. And we got down there, and it wasn't very long before we heard five very loud, strong, heel-to-toe footsteps over our heads, and we were pretty much under what would be the living room. So, you know, obviously, I thought, oh, somebody's home. Somebody just walked in, or somebody was in the house the whole time, kind of embarrassed to be in somebody's basement, you know. They're not expecting us. So I ran right up the stairs, ran right past the real estate agent. I was crying, hello, hello, you know, just so that people wouldn't be alarmed, you know, to hear people in their basement.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nobody there. So that was a bit of an oddity. I thought, well, maybe they just left. So I opened the front door and looked around. There's no one outside. There's no traffic in the car traffic. I looked around at the back sliding door. There's no one on the property. And I thought, well, you know, is it possible like somebody was just hiding while we were doing all of this and they were embarrassed and then they came out from their hiding place? I mean, you know, you're trying to rationalize this because you're in an unoccupied house and this sound was human footfall. It was nothing else. It was not anything settling. It was not pipes, you know, contracting, somebody walking, and just five steps and then done. You know, we didn't hear where else this person might have gone. We didn't hear a door open. We didn't hear a door close. Just five footsteps. And I tell you, we were all totally puzzled. Like, how is this possible? How is this possible? And of course, we went through the house again, shouting hello and all this kind of stuff. So unless there's some lunatic in there, I mean, you know, there wasn't, weren't even, you couldn't even hide behind the drapes or anything. There was no one there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had other things to do. So I figured, okay, I guess somebody somehow was temporarily in the house, but I'm not interested in this, so let's go on. And we saw a couple more houses, and I kind of forgot about that for a while. But, you know, when you're going back, you're in the car, you're going over everything from start to finish, first house, the second, third, and so forth. And that's when I thought again, you know, hey, what about that? You know, what was that? And, you know, my wife said, I have no explanation for that. And she said, by the way, did you see the guy's face? He was like white as a sheet. And I thought, and then it hit me that, you know what? Maybe this happens every time he shows this house. Maybe he was waiting for that to happen the whole time and was on edge. Because he wasn't, you know, he didn't join us. He wasn't like shouting hello. He wasn't like wondering what it was. He was just kind of flabbergasted and kind of stood there. But, you know, that's not a spectacular piece of paranormal activity, but it is an unexplainable event.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what got me started about this whole thing. So I wanted to start the book with that, so kind of tee up like where I'm coming from. Like, I had this experience and I realized that this guy might be one of these people. And of course, as the stories go on, the paranormal evidence becomes more and more sensational. But, you know, I cannot explain what happened that day. And that was my introduction to this whole concept.
I really am getting a thought in my mind about the realtor. Oh, God, I have to go out and say, go there again. I don't want to go in there, you know.
No, I mean, what do you do with a thing like that? And if you read further on in the book, there's another case of a real realtor who was really facing some really creepy stuff. That was Worse Than Empty.
Okay.
And in that case, the agent just said, you know, look, I'm not going back there. I'm just not going back there. So that's how he dealt with it. Because I'm also interested not just in these stories, but, you know, how people deal with it. Like, you know, what do you do? This guy couldn't go back and ask because this was years ago. But everyone else.
No, go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say, what did he see? What scared the bejesus out of him?
What, the other story?
Yeah.
Well, there's another story about a guy who has to move a house. And, you know, it's supposed to be empty. He uses a key to open the lockbox. I mean, that's the only way to get in. If that thing's locked with the key in it, then nobody's in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was inspecting the home, and he started to hear like a voice upstairs. And he started to hear like things thumping and bumping around. And then the voice got violent and loud. And it scared him. So he made a hasty exit. And he was disturbed by this, and he was wondering, he started to rationalize, as anybody else would, like, well, there must have been someone up there, must have been a workman who was cursing his tools and doing some work in the house, because he noticed when he walked into the house that there was some rosin paper on the floor and there were a bunch of tools and coffee cups around. So, you know, house work was being done on the house. So he just made himself feel better by saying that must have been it. It was later that he realized that, wait a minute, that front door was locked from the outside, so there couldn't have been anybody in there. But he just let it go. But the next time he went back there, it started to happen again, and he was with somebody, and they both witnessed it. And the client, you know, wanted to talk to whoever was upstairs, figuring, you know, it's somebody who has information about the house. So they went through every room, and they were all empty. And they both then made a hasty exit. And the guy made up his mind after that, like, you know, there's no one in this house. You know, somebody's grumbling and grunting and there are things being dragged across the floor that that are invisible. So, you know, that's enough for me. You know, don't send me back there. I'm not going back there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how he dealt with it, by just eliminating it from his life. Other people deal with it in other ways. You know, some people can deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. And some people get very confused. You know, am I dreaming? Am I, you know, pinch myself? Am I hallucinating? You know, it depends, I guess, on upbringing and what you, you know, what you think about those things.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of nasty things in life, but you have to go on, you know, and some people are strong enough to just say, well, oh, whatever that is, it's not going to scare me away from what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just feel sorry for the people that are scared, because, I mean, all of us have walked into a place at some way that isn't comfortable to be there, you know, mm-hmm. and you don't necessarily think it's a haunting or something, but the air is really, you know, sometimes you can cut it with a knife, sometimes it's really cold, and, you know, I guess you can't sit there and debate what's happening, but you just kind of walk away. You know, it makes you uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So did what about your house now that you said had a couple of things going on over the years? When you first went to the house and looked through it and everything, did you feel anything there?
No, not at all. It was a couple of years before I noticed. Well, now, I don't want to say that I live in a haunted house, because my son and his girlfriend like to visit us from Florida, and they're not going to want to stay here if I tell them it's a haunted house. It's not a haunted house. I've never seen a ghost or anything like that. But, you know, just like any other place, there are some things that happen once in a while. And I would say what happened here was actually with my son first. He once said, you know, did you hear that? And I said, what? So I just heard guys walk right by, you know, this window. So we go out there, you know, with the baseball. We didn't see anybody. But my wife then said one night, I thought I heard you downstairs, but you're upstairs. I said, oh, you know, I don't know what that was, but it wasn't me. And, you know, so little things like that, that you could kind of explain, okay, it was sounds from the outside. But some of the things that, well, I'll just tell you the craziest thing that happened, and there's no explaining this, all right? And it's not frightening. Nothing here is frightening.
Mm-hmm.
But, here's the thing. Like, we watch TV in the family room, and then, you know, it's an open plan, so the kitchen is always on our right. And I kept seeing, like, some dark thing darting down the hallway. And I just assumed, okay, it's, like, my glasses. You know, if you wear glasses, there's that little frame, or maybe it was an eyelash in my vision, you know, but it's happening for a long time, maybe a year or so. And I just kept my mouth shut because I figured, you know, this is me misinterpreting something. So one day it was just like, I saw it again, like zoom. And I asked my wife, you know, I said, do you ever see, notice movement in the kitchen? And she turns to me and says, all the time, you know, so it was a revelation. And I said, yeah, well, I'm not sure what that is. I'm not ready to say that's anything paranormal, but, you know, little stuff like that. But the one thing that was the most puzzling is that we were, again, in the family room, and I started to hear knocking. And it was like tapping, you know, like, I don't know if you heard that, but it's just like, you know, it's almost deliberate. And so I turned off the TV sound. I said, are you hearing that? She said, yeah. So I thought it was coming from the kitchen. So I went into the kitchen and I'm opening all the cabinets, wondering, you know, is it an animal? Is it a mouse? What could it be? And then I hear some more and it sounds like it's in the basement. So I go down in the basement and we're looking around, you know, is there a critter in here? And we hear it again. It's like it's in the kitchen again. And I think this is typical. You know, when you hear these kinds of audio phenomena, they always come from some place where you're not.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, after a while, it stopped. And I thought, okay, I don't know what it was, but it has stopped. So let's forget about it, finish the movie. So my wife goes and sits down. I turn and I hear something and I turn around. And from out of the granite countertop comes a black shape. It was pretty opaque and it was kind of shaped like the spade end of a shovel.
Mm-hmm.
And it went came through the granite countertop, went to the ceiling, and then through the ceiling. I mean, I saw this with my eyes. I mean, this is a black object that's sailing through solid objects. And I turned around and I said, did you see that? And she said, no, what? I said, did you hear anything? She said, I heard like a flapping sound. I said, yes, that's what I heard. I heard like wings flapping. So I thought, oh, it must be a bird. It's possible a bird could come in the open sunroom, you know, and get caught in the house. And so I thought for a split second, I thought, oh, it's a bird. But when I turned around, here was this shape effortlessly floating through solid material. So that is a lot more impressive than, you know, just corner of the eye stuff. I mean, that was something that I saw with my eyes, and there's no way on this earth I can explain what it was. I didn't feel frightened. You know, and I think really, I just want to take a moment here to say this. When things like this happen, at least to me, there's not time to be frightened because your brain is trying to process this. You know, like you're spending that couple of seconds trying to define what this thing is. So maybe you get scared later, but when things like that are happening, especially like you're just in wonderment. So yeah, that actually did happen a couple of years ago, and that is just flat out unexplainable.
Yeah. Does it bother you that it is unexplainable, or just, you know, it's happened so many times for you that you just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, okay, you know, that's normal. It goes around here sometimes, just goes around.
Yeah. Well, that only happened the one time. There's never been a thing like that before or since.
Yeah.
But no, it doesn't bother me. None of this stuff bothers me. I just figure, all right, so I guess this is something that sometimes happens. It happened, it's over, or what am I going to do? I'm going to go on with my life. I'm not worried about it. I mean, it would be totally different if, like some people, they see things that frighten them or seem threatening to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything that's ever happened here has just been like an oddity. There's no malice. There's no frightening edge to that. It's just like, that was very unusual. But it did happen, and now that it's done happening, I think I'll go back to my life.
It's true. Although sometimes when people say that they see black, shadow people, mm-hmm. they think mm-hmm. it's, oh my God, the devil's here, you know, it's the Grim Reaper or whatever. I'm not so sure about that. Some people say that they can't, they're trying to be available to see, but they don't know how to do it yet. You know, like somebody newbie passes over and doesn't know, you know, how to mm-hmm. how to grow. To say that that's not the right word, but
I understand all of those interpretations. I mean, it's open to interpretation, isn't it?
Sure.
Because we really know. It's not like we can stop that thing and ask it a question. So you know, it's just a personal interpretation. I mean, my whole approach to life is pretty easygoing. I mean, I like I said earlier, you know, my entire approach to life is based on the fact that, you know, human beings have a tiny knowledge of the world and its workings. And, you know, I'm very comfortable saying that, you know, there are things I can't comprehend. Mm-hmm. I live in a world I can't comprehend. So that's just another piece of it. As long as I can keep going, then I'm not going to be frightened. I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. Believe me, I've heard many tales from many people of things that were much harder to just be comfortable with. So I consider myself fairly lucky in that respect.
Mm-hmm. And I just got a note from somebody that, from Schiffer, Dinah. And she says that she remembers that the hardcover book would make a great gift for any story likers. And she said, especially like for the holidays. So, mm-hmm. yeah, there you got some validation right there.
Well, yeah. I mean, if there's anybody out there listening and this sort of thing is of interest to you, I did give it my all. And I think it came out pretty good. So if you want to add that to your collection, I don't think you'll be disappointed.
No, and you know, one of my other stories that my favorite story in the book was the tiny bubbles. because it deals with orbs, and in the paranormal world, there are opposing thoughts about orbs. I mean, some people say that they're spirits or lost souls, and other people say they're bugs and dust and, you know, whatever. Can you tell us a little bit about the tiny bubbles?
Yeah. Well, first let me say that tiny bubbles was included in the book because I had sort of a cinematic approach to the book, too. I mean, we can go into that later, but this story is sort of towards the end, but still in the middle, and it was supposed to be comedy relief, right? Like, you're reading all of these serious stories. I wanted to have a little bit of a laugh before we got into the really heavy stuff, just so people could keep a break and, you know, just to have variety.
Yeah.
So, you know, that story is not a particularly frightening one. But it is interesting. And, well, the Tiny Bubbles is a story about a woman who got a job working at reception in a hotel that had a reputation. She wasn't very much aware of it. But as she works there, she gets to talk to other people who work in the hotel, and they tell her about their experiences, which are rather impressive. They claim to see, you know, apparitions, full body apparitions, particularly of people who used to work in the hotel that they knew personally. That's an unusual twist. And also there were some people who were, you know, housekeepers on particular floor in the hotel. They would, you know, make the bed, then go in the bathroom, do their routine. Certain rooms, they claimed they would make the bed, go into the bathroom. By the time they were done doing that, the bedclothes had been disarranged and, without anyone having come into the room, without any sound or anything. They just come back out and suddenly the quilt is all bunched up or on the floor. And that would happen regularly. So, you know, this place did have a reputation for some activity, but she was kind of insulated from it because in her particular position down there, it wasn't happening. Until it did, and what this woman witnessed was an orb-like, small, maybe pea-sized shape bubble or orb. And the thing that was unusual about it is the way that its behavior, because it traveled in a straight line at about chest height at a steady pace, as if it were on an invisible conveyor. I mean, that kind of movement, you know, not floating, not, you know, no acrobatics, just a dead, solid, straight line. And it would go down to the hall, and when it got to the door down there, it would either go through it or disappear. It just stopped. You couldn't see it anymore. So this happened one time, and she only saw the second half of its journey. And she thought, well, this, I don't know what I just saw. That was very weird. She tried to figure out, is there any trick of the light happening here? Is it a soap bubble? Like, what was that thing? But, you know, she had to get back to work. It was forgotten until it happened the second time. And this time she was able to notice it right from the start. So we're talking about traversing an entire hallway that is the size of the hotel. So it's quite a long trip for a soap bubble or something to travel in that dead straight line at that even pace. That was the unnatural part of it. You know, if you saw a little floating thing, you wouldn't even look twice, but this thing was like on a mission in the behave. And again, it went right by her desk and she was able to observe it. And it looked just like that little bead. And it just stalwartly went right down the hallway a second time, right to that door, and then disappeared. And she just could not understand what that was. I mean, she tried to look up, you know, what could this be? I asked her, well, you know, I'm thinking it's got to be a bubble, right? So do you have a laundry room or something like that might have produced this bubble? Of course they do. It was two floors below her. So for it to be a soap bubble, it would have to travel two floors up somehow, maybe through the ventilation, and then at the end of the hallway, and then gone across the entire hallway. But you know that the only thing that carries a soap bubble or anything lighter than air is a current of air. And not only wasn't there a current of air that would have done that, but, you know, even on a current of air, something that like that would have bounced around, it would have dipped, it would have moved. So it is an unexplained orb. And she wasn't, you know, she wasn't that bothered by it, but she certainly couldn't explain it. And since the hotel has a reputation already, the next step is to just consider it another one of the manifestations of whatever's going on over there.
Yeah, but now I have Don Ho in my head every time I see that. Yeah.
Yeah, I did reference Don Ho. I think it was rather clever, too.
it was.
Well, there it is. Yeah, well, you know, in the song Tiny Bubbles, he says tiny bubbles make him feel warm all over, because he's talking about champagne, and I just mentioned that these tiny bubbles we're going to read about are not going to make you feel warm all over.
No.
I don't know how you're going to react to it, but it's not going to be like that. But yeah, in that particular chapter, that, you know, I spoke to this woman on the phone a few times, and I got the facts right and everything, and I ran it by her and everything. But in that particular chapter, like I said, I wanted it to be light. And you'll notice in that one, there's dialogue, and it does kind of read like a fiction, you know, like a story, not a report, but definitely a little bit more comfortable. So I hope that people will get to that point and have a little laugh and enjoy it before we get back to the serious stuff.
It was good. Now, at the end of... Sorry.
No, I'm just glad you enjoyed it.
I did, and I'm going to read it again. But at the end of the book, you're asking people, because the book isn't brand new, you would like them to share stories and get in touch with you. So since the book has been published a few years ago, is that invitation still valid?
Yes, indeed it is, because, you know, that's my hobby. I want to hear from people. I did hear from a few people, not many, and I did make notes about what they were telling me, as I thought, you know, I would like to do more of this, but I am still a working person and I still have many obligations. So I'm going to wait until I have more leisure time to get back to perhaps another volume of this. But yeah, the invitation stands.
Where can they find you?
Well, they can find me. They can send anything they've got to in my email, and I'll just say that it is skeletonkeysstories@gmail.com. It's all one word, all lowercase, skeletonkeysstories@gmail.com. And I will be able to communicate with somebody and discuss what they experienced.
That's good, because I know a lot of people that are listening do have stories to tell. And so, guys, don't be afraid to do it. All right. We've got to get going because they're going to hook us off the air. So I want to thank you for joining in and sharing the book. And, you know, if you start another book, you know, let us know. We'll get you back here and talk about more ghost stories.
Absolutely. Well, I do continue to write. And when I'm ready to compile another collection, I will let you know.
You know where to find me. And let's thank all the listeners as well. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2024. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompetech.com.